We are in Perek Lamed Beis, in middle of Pasuk Yud Aleph. Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk, in middle of Pasuk Yud Aleph. Lamed Beis Yud Aleph. One second, we're getting to the page.
172.
172 from the official page keeper. Yes, 172. Last time we were learning, 2 weeks ago, last week there was no class. 2 weeks ago, we were learning about this whole concept of Yaakov Avinu feeling humbled by all the kindness that Hashem did. And we learned the various opinions, if it's that he thinks sin could cause it, or he just felt he wasn't worthy of it, or whatever. So we're not going to go through that whole beginning, but we are in the middle of the Pasuk, so just to start from the beginning of the Pasuk, Yaakov Avinu is telling Hashem, when he's praying, Kotainti, I've been diminished, Mikol HaChasadim, from all the kindness, and Mikol HaEmes, from all the truth, Asher Asisus Avdecha, that you have done with me. In other words, Yaakov Avinu maintained that he used up his merits, and therefore, even though Hashem promised him he's going to be saved, he won't necessarily be saved. And he says, why not? Ki b'makli avarti es hayarden hazeh, because with my stick, I passed the Yarden, this Jordan River, and now I became to two massive camps. Like we learned before, Yaakov Avinu divided the camp into two, one camp to fight, one camp to run away. So Yaakov Avinu is explaining why. In fact, the Daskeni Mibalatesis brings down that a Roman empress asked, how could Yaakov Avinu be afraid? Didn't God promise him he's going to bring him back? So he answered that the answer is in the Pasuk itself. Ki b'makli avarti es hayarden hazeh, meaning when God made me the promise, I was only with a stick. It simply means with my walking stick was the only thing that I had.
Yeah.
So Yaakov Avinu said the promise that Hashem made was to me personally. But now that I became two massive camps, they were never promised from Hashem that Hashem will bring them back. And that's what Yaakov Avinu was afraid. Not personal. Personal, he had the promise from Hashem. And that's what he said, with my stick I crossed the Yarden, that's when I was promised. Rashi brings on over here two interpretations. What does it mean, with my stick I crossed the Yarden? So first of all, Rashi says that Eliphaz, like we discussed at the beginning of the Parsha, when Yaakov ran away, basically, Esav sent Eliphaz, his son, to kill Yaakov. In the beginning of Vayetzer, we learned this. It was a while ago. Esav sent Eliphaz, his son, to kill Yaakov. But Eliphaz happened to like his uncle, Yaakov, and he didn't want to kill him. So he comes to Yaakov and says, you know, I have a dilemma. My father told me to kill you, but I don't want to. What should I do? So Yaakov said to him, you know what? Take away all my money. Take away all my possessions. A poor man is considered dead. And you tell your father you killed me. Because you really did by taking away all my money. That's why Yaakov Avinu was only left with a stick. Because logically, as we learned before, when Avram sent Eliezer for a shidduch, for Rivka, he sent him with ten camels loaded up with good gold and silver and all of, you know, different presents. The logic dictates that when Yaakov Avinu went to go for a shidduch, you know, it wasn't like nowadays you can show your bank statements, financial statements, credit card, you know. Although days, you wanted to make a good impression to find a nice wife, you have to show the money, you know, you have to bring the presents. So logic dictates that Yaakov Avinu did bring presents. Yet, when he came to Laban's house, he was empty-handed. Why? Because Eliphaz took away all the money. So number one, it says, Ki b'makli avarti es hayarden hazeh, with my stick, meaning nothing but my stick itself. And the second interpretation, Rashi brings out Medr Shagoda. What does it mean with my stick across the Yarden? Yaakov was going, and he needed to cross the river. There were no bridges. He took a stick, hit the river, it split, and he walked through. Thus the Medr Shkiba Makli Avarti, it's a Yarden with my stick, I passed through the Jordan River. So the Mefarshim explain that whatever, like we learned already many times, that Ramban says, all the incidents that we find historically with the Jewish people happened to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Happened already to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Jews crossed the Yarden when Yeshua took the Jews into the entirety of Israel. They split the Yarden, the Jordan River. So where did they get that power from? Because Yaakov split the Jordan River. Now this stick, this Makri, was a very famous stick. Well, not only Meishe Rabbeinu, in fact, in tomorrow's Chitas is going to talk about Hashem telling Meishe speak to the rock, and he took the stick and hit the rock, but before in Chumash, there was a certain stick that Adam Rishon had, was given to Noach, and then Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Yaakov had the stick, and he took it down to Egypt, and eventually Yehuda had it, and then Meishe Rabbeinu got it, and David got it, and said every king had the stick until the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And says Mashiach, the Yalkut says Mashiach is going to also have that stick. Now this stick, according to one opinion in the Medrash, when we were learning about the Mishkan, the Briach, the beam, the pole that held the boards together, so we learned there was the middle pole that miraculously, when it came to an end, turned and went through the next wall, then through the next wall. Through all three walls, it miraculously turned. That stick was the famous stick of Yaakov Avinu. That was the stick that Meishe Rabbeinu used throughout the time of the Midbar. So it was a miraculous type of a stick that Yaakov Avinu crossed the Yarden.
But if I remember correctly, now the Italians have it, right? Huh? One time you mentioned, I think, the Italian people have it now.
No. No, the Italians, the Romans have some of the objects of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't think the stick they have. Okay, now, the question... Oh, fine. I didn't scream yet. Almost doesn't count.
What do you mean the Italians? I mean the Pope?
The Romans. The Romans. The Vatican has in their archives a lot of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. They have the menorah. They have various different objects of the Beis HaMikdash that they have. Huh?
How do we know?
How do we know? Because it's historical there. I mean, there were people that said they saw them or whatever. They say they have them. The Gemara says that the Medrash said they did carry back a lot of things back to Rome with them when they destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, the question is, why does Yaakov Avinu say Yardin Hazeh? Hazeh means he pointed to it. So the Mefarshim say either he was in close proximity at this time to the Yardin, to the Jordan River, or some Mefarshim learn Hazeh refers to Yaakov, or the stick. Not this Jordan River. Ki b'makli Hazeh, like with this stick, I crossed the Yardin. Because the question is, Hazeh means this. So this means you're pointing to it. So if it was by the Jordan River, then Hazeh can go on the Jordan. But if it wasn't near the Jordan River, what does Hazeh go on? So Hazeh goes on the stick. And now he became two big camps. So now he's davening, and he's continuing his prayer to Hashem. And he said, one more important lesson that people don't keep so much. This is definitely worth mentioning because people should keep it in mind. Yaakov Avinu's answer, we see that when a person has it good, you're always supposed to remember the days when it wasn't so good. And a lot of times, people, when they strike it rich, they forget about the past when they were simple people. You know, and therefore, you know, they should remember. In fact, there's a story told about a very wealthy person who became wealthy. And once a year, he would put on his old, tattered clothing and live the day like a beggar. That it shouldn't go to his head, you know, that what he is now, and he should forget what he was. Yaakov Avinu is telling Hashem, and this you see just in passing, Rabbeinu Bachaya says this lesson, or Bachya, whichever way you pronounce it. Rabbeinu Bachaya says that even though Ata Yisi Lishnei Machanais, even though now I became two wealthy camps, but nevertheless, Yaakov Avinu didn't fail to mention his past of poverty. He kept it in mind to keep his head shouldn't swell too much. So he reminded himself of his past. There's a famous story which we mentioned. There was once a great tzaddik that had a disciple, a great rebbe that had a disciple who was very hospitable. He was always at an open house and he was very charitable, but he wasn't rich. So his rebbe gave him a bracha, he should get rich. And he became very, very, very wealthy. But you know what happens many times when people become wealthy, they change their nature. And he stopped having guests, and he didn't let people into the house. What?
Revenge. You get rich, get revenge.
That's right. He didn't let people into the house, and his whole lifestyle changed. It came to his Rebbe's attention that his student changed because of his bracha. So he felt a little guilty. He said, his personality changed because of my blessing. It's not too good. So he went to visit him. He said, I have to rectify the situation. He went to visit him. The servant opens the door. What can I do for you? You know? He said, I'm here to see your master. Hey, there's no time. He said, tell him it's me. Okay. Goes back. His Rebbe comes running out. The rich man comes running out. His Rebbe comes to visit him. He says, oh, Rebbe, what an honor. I'm so excited you came to visit me. Please come in, sit down. He says, his Rebbe, a cup of tea. In the middle, the Rebbe is looking around the house. He sees all the wealth and everything. So in the middle, the Rebbe picks himself up and he walks over to the mirror. I'm sorry. Let's go back. First, the Rebbe says, Yankel, come here. He says, he takes him to the window. He says, what do you see? He says, I see all the people in the street, this guy running and that guy running and this schlepper and that schlepper. And, you know, I see all the people in the street. He says, Yankel, come ahead. Come here. Takes him over to the mirror. And he says, what do you see now? He says, what do you mean? Now I see myself. I see myself. He says, Rebbe turns to him and says, I don't understand. This is glass and this is glass. Why this glass do you see out into the street and this glass you only see yourself? They're both glass. She says, Rebbe, what, you don't understand? He says, this glass has silver coating behind it. It's silver coated. So when it's silver coated, it reflects, you see yourself. So the Rebbe says, oh, so when there's a silver coating, you only see yourself. Maybe we should scrape away a little bit of the silver. And the Rebbe goes over to the back of the mirror and starts scraping away a little bit of the silver. And he says, maybe then you'll see some other people instead of only seeing yourself. The guy was a smart guy. He says, Rebbe, I got the message. I got your point. Well taken. It's going to change. And he changed and went back to a decent human being.
Rabbi.
There's a Hasidic word. One great Chassid, his name is Rabbi Greinem, was Mashpi in Lubavitch. He said, there's three things that must affect the person. If a person has them and they're not affected, it's only because they didn't have enough. He said, mashke makes you drunk. Whiskey makes you drunk. If a person drinks and it's not drunk, it's only because he didn't drink enough. And then he says, money makes a person meshuga. Money makes you crazy. If a person has money and they're not crazy, it's only because they don't have enough yet. But when they get enough money, they're going to become crazy. And then he says, Chassidus refines a person. The learning of Chassidus refines a person. If a person learns it's Chassidus and he's not refined, it's only because he didn't learn enough. But when he learns enough, he'll definitely become refined. So money doesn't have an impact. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says that this pasuk teaches a Jew that even though now Yaakov Avinu was very, very wealthy, to the extent that he had two massive camps, he didn't forget his poor past, and therefore he said to Hashem in prayer, I know where I came from, I was nothing, and therefore I... Yeah.
Rabbi, in reading page 173, the English of the Rashi, in the paragraph on the right-hand side, 14 to 22,
no,
there's something that ties in with Israel today, in the middle of it. In times when Israel is powerless...
Yeah, but we're not there yet.
Are you gonna, well, let me make my point, then you do what you want with it, okay?
But you're not there.
In times when Israel is powerless to fight its enemies, it must forego the luxury of asserting that its cause is just. Instead, must appease its enemies in terms that they, in their greed, can comprehend. And we know, since Israel became a state back in the late 40s, they have never appeased the Arabs. Every time the Arabs did something to them, they kicked their butt.
Let's get there. So now Yaakov Avinu is davening in Pasuk Yud Beis, and he says to Hashem, Hatzileini no, please save me or rescue me. Miyad Achi, from the hands of my brother, Miyad Esav, from the hands of Esav. And like Rashi says, it's what's the redundancy? My brother Esav, we know it's his brother Esav. He says, it might be my brother, but he sure doesn't act like it. He acts like Esav instead of acting like my brother. And he says, Ki yare anechi Esav, because I'm afraid of him. Penyavi vihikani, lest he will smite me. Aim albanim, a mother together with their children. Okay? Now, there's a famous Rosh HaTevis over here from the Balaturim. If you take the pasuk, the words Hatzileini no, the first three words, Hatzileini begins with a hey, no is a nun, miyad is a mem. That's the letters of Haman. Haman was a descendant of Esav, because Amalek came from Esav, and Haman is a descendant of Amalek. So what Yaakov Avinu is actually davening now, he's not only davening to be saved from Esav now, but he's saying, Hatzileini no miyad, hey nun mem, if you just switch the mem and the nun, it's Haman, that he's davening to be saved even from the future of Haman. Because that doesn't make sense in Hebrew. You don't say, save me, please. You say, please save me. Okay. The Zayir says over here, why didn't Yaakov just say, in simple English, God, in simple Hebrew, I mean, save me? Why does he have to say from Esav? Why does he have to say from my brother? Why couldn't he just say, save me? Of course, we're talking about Esav over here. Doesn't Hashem know? Doesn't Hashem know who he's davening for? For Hashem, he should have just said, God, save me. And God would understand who he wants to be saved from. So he brings down, the Zohar says the following. If he said, rescue me, people will think it only means from Lavan, that Hashem already saved him. If he said, miyad achi, he could be from his kinsmen. You know, from friends, they're also called brothers. So he said all of it. But then the Shulah HaKadosh writes, even more, and this is an interesting halacha that the Shulah writes. When a person davens, they seemingly can say, God, you know what I need. Now, why do we have to go into details when we daven to God what we should ask for? So the answer is, we learn out from here that when a person is to daven, the Shulah says, even though you know God knows the details, you should go into the details. He says, nevertheless, you have to be specific when praying. Why? Because the letters of davening, the way the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah instituted them, the text of davening, are so holy that the letters themselves have a tremendous impact on the heavenly courts. So therefore, in the Shemoneh Esrei, we go through the details of what we request. If a person has a personal need, they shouldn't say, well, God knows what I want, what I need, and therefore I don't have to ask him. You have to ask him. We find a similar question, similar point, by Matan Torah. It says, God told Moshe Rabbeinu to ask the Jews a question, and the Jews answered, and Moshe Rabbeinu went back to God to tell God what the Jews answered. So Rashi says, doesn't Hashem know what the Jews said? You need, it's courtesy. You're given a shlichus, you're given a job, you go back to the person and say, I did the job. You come back with the response. Even though the person is going to know the response, and Hashem definitely knew what the response was, nevertheless, you do it in the details. I have a dilemma. It's husband and wife. Who goes first?
Wife.
Yeah. By the way, she's going first because she was first. Yeah.
If you don't have the day with the same detail, you have to repeat the same detail.
Yeah.
The same thing.
Yes, we always have to repeat the same details because every day is a new day. Not only is every day a new day, but we do it three times a day. And if you daven Mincha Ma'ariv right one after the next, you don't have even that much time between Mincha Ma'ariv. But every davening of the day has its uniqueness that the other prayers don't have. And therefore, we have to continuously go into the details. Yeah, God needs time to see if we're worth it.
It's true.
Yeah. What?
Okay, in the prayer Shema Kolenu, there's a place where you put in the personal prayer, correct?
Right, if you want.
If you want. Now, in that personal prayer, should it be verbal, or should it just be a thought? And if it's verbal, does it have to be in Hebrew? Or if you're saying the whole Shemoneh Esrei in Hebrew, and that personal prayer you say in English?
You could do it any way you want. You could do it in thought, you could do it in speech, you could do it any way you want.
What part of the baby?
At that point, you can say in thought is just as powerful as...
Yeah, but let's not get off the topic too much. Let's get back here. When a person davening, though, what the Pasuk is teaching us, we're not going into the details now of davening, but when the person is davening, he should go into the details. Okay? And he says... lest he will kill me, mother together with children. Like he said, and this emphasizes even more. Yaakov Avinu didn't say, lest he will smite me and my children. He was not afraid of himself because Hashem promised him that he's going to be good. What was Yaakov Avinu afraid of? People that weren't part of the promise, the mothers and the children, because they weren't part of the original promise. They weren't there then. Okay, then he says, Yata Marta, and you told me, and you said, and you will, Heitev, Heitev, Imach, I will definitely do good with you. And the double expression is an expression of definitely doing it. And you will keep doing it. He says, also, what does it mean, Heitev, Heitev, Imach, I will do good with you? Yaakov Avinu is telling Hashem, listen, I might not deserve it, but you have to do it because you promised me. So people shouldn't say, hey God, you promise and you don't keep. So Yaakov Avinu is telling Hashem, Ve'ata Marta, you promised, you have to do it. So therefore you have to keep doing it. You have to keep your promise. There's a book called Bustanoi. There's an interesting part over there that there was a person that the king... was putting to death for a crime that he did. And the guy said, I have one last request. The king said, what is it? He said, I want to drink a cup of water. So the king said, wish granted. So the guy says to the king, but I'm afraid somebody will kill me before I finish the cup. So the king said, I swear nobody will kill you until you finish drinking the cup. And the guy took the water and threw it on the floor. And the king didn't kill him. The king promised, he kept it. This idea fell into my head now. But Yaakov Avinu is telling Hashem, "Ata Marta, Heitev, Heitev, Imach, you promised, and therefore you have to keep it." Okay. What else did he say? "V'samti azaracha kochel hayom," and you also promised me that you're going to make my children like the sand of the sea. "Asher la yisafim meirev," that will never be able to be counted. So the Mefarshim ask, Rashi asks, Hashem never told this statement to Yaakov Avinu. If you remember in the dream, Hashem told him, V'ayazaracha ka'afar ha'aretz, like the dirt of the ground. He never told him you're going to be like the sand of the sea. So Rashi says, where do we find in Chumash that Hashem promised Yaakov you're going to be like the sand of the sea? And Rashi says, he meant what he told Avram Avinu. Because he's talking about Elokei Avi Avram, Elokei Avi Yitzchak. So he said, Avram Avinu was promised, Kechel Hayom. So he says, Avram, he said, Aber Zacha Kekech Ve'ashmai V'chachol Asher Osfas Hayom. So he said, that's the promise that I meant. Okay, so now that Yaakov Avinu finished davening, he did one part of it, now he starts the second part. Like Rashi said before, that he prepared to do three things: to fight, to daven, and to send presents. You have to take cover all the fronts, so to speak, in the battle. So Vayanan Sham Balailahu, Yaakov Avinu slept there that night, and he said, why did he sleep there? The Barbanel says, Yaakov Avinu was expecting an answer from God that night, if his prayer was answered. But nothing happened. So that's why when he woke up in the morning, and there was no answer from God that I'm going to protect you and save you, Yaakov Avinu said, well, then I got to go to step two. Now I have to go send presents. Because if Hashem would have promised him that night, you have nothing to worry about, why should he waste his money on Esav? Right? He might as well give it to Tzedakah better. But for a good cause. So it says, the Barbanel says, and the Dalshich and different people, he actually slept there that night. Because why is the Pasuk telling us he slept there? Who cares? I mean, he should have told you, he took a present. He doesn't tell us everything he did. He wants to tell us that he actually was hoping to get it. What did he do? Vayikach min habor b'yodei, he took from what he had in his hand, mincha, present, le'esav achiv, to Esav, his brother. Now, Rashi says, what does it mean, min habor b'yodei? Simply means what was coming in his hand. What expression is it? So Rashi answers simply, habor b'yodei is an expression means in his possession. He took from what was in his possession a gift. But Rashi brings on a Medrash, and the Balaturim even says a numerical value over here. The Medrash says, min habor b'yodei means he sent, besides all the animals the Torah is going to talk about soon, he actually sent diamonds and expensive stones that people always held in their hand. Min habor b'yodei means, what did he send them? Things people hold in their hands. What are people, the expensive stones people for security held in their hands? And the Baal HaTurim says that the word mincha, present, is the same numerical value as avonim, of stones. Mincha equals 203, and avonim also equals 103. Aleph, Beis, Nun, Yud, Mem equals 103. So therefore, what is the mincha, what is the present? That he sent them expensive stones also. We don't find it too many other times, though.
But when it says Matana,
mincha?
I mean, mincha would be stone.
No, only because it says the word biyadi. But he says, biyadi mincha is another hint to the fact of mincha, of expensive stones. What did he do now? He sent as follows. And this... the whole interesting reckoning over here of the Cheshbainis. Ezim Asayim, 200 she-goats, Tiyoshim Esrim, 20 he-goats. That means there was 10 female goats for every male goat. Because as the Mefarshim say, Yaakov was a cattler. He dealt with cattle. And he knew, it was like a veterinarian. But he knew the proportion of male animals to female animals. And the whole cheshbon over here is basically the way it worked is that once a goat made another, once the male goat made the female goat pregnant, that was it. So to get the best opportunity, each male goat would be able to impregnate 10 female goats in a mating season. So Yaakov Avinu sent all the proportions of male and female animals that Esav should gain the maximum benefit from all the animals that he sent.
With a minimum amount of goats.
Well, he sent 200 she-goats, 20 male goats. V'chelem Asayim, 200 ewes, which are female rams. V'elem Esrim, and 20 rams. Yes, sir. Yeah.
I mean, well, doesn't that mean lack of faith in a way?
No, we also
but
have to do...
protect them.
Three steps.
I'm going to go off a little bit. because it's basic Igeres HaTshuva in Tanya. When you get into a fight with somebody, let's take that back, I didn't say it yet. When a person sinned in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they had to do tshuva. In addition to the tshuva, they brought a korban chatos, a sin offering, or an asham, the various different types of sin offerings. If somebody transgressed the positive mitzvah, they would bring a korban oila. If they transgressed certain negative mitzvahs, sometimes it was a chatos, sometimes it was an asham, depending what it is. The Gemara says that the korban is not the kapara, is not the tshuva. The person, as it says, v'izvadu es chatosam asher also, the pasuk says, when you brought a sin offering, there was a mitzvah of confession, of vidui. You had to confess the sins that you did. You had to do tshuva. What was the purpose of the korban? What was the purpose of the korban? So the Gemara explains, and Alter Rebbe brings it down and gets a tshuva in Tanya. He gives an analogy. Two people get into a fight. Two friends get into a fight. And somebody did something wrong to the next. So you come to the friend and you ask forgiveness. And he'll forgive you. But the relationship still is not the same as it was before you did that thing wrong. Yeah, he'll forgive you. You say, I'm sorry, you mean it. He'll say, okay, I forgive you. But the relationship was damaged. How do you rebuild the relationship? You send the person a present. So you have to rebuild, so to speak, a relationship. How do you do it? By sending a present. You hopefully, through the present, you create the relationship that existed before you sinned. The same thing that Altareb explains in Tanya, Geres HaTshuva, it goes into fasting, and fasting which is in place of Karbanos, that the concept of a sacrifice was not the tshuva. The tshuva you had to do anyway. The Karban was to recreate the relationship like it was before. Yaakov and Esav got into a fight, obviously. In order for Yaakov Avinu to rebuild this relationship with Esav, he sent presents that they should rebuild the brotherly relationship that he had before the fight. A Jew has to do things in a natural way. Even though Yaakov Avinu davened Hashem, he trusted in Hashem. But you know what? If somebody is sick and they davened Hashem, it's not enough. You have to go to the doctor. Right? It's not enough to say, I trust in Hashem and I believe it. Yeah, that's very important. And the Jew has to also realize that the doctor is not the healer. The doctor is only the tool for Hashem to heal with. But really Hashem heals. So what's the concept of, you still have to make a physical vessel. That's what Hashem wants. You're not allowed to rely on a miracle. And the Mefarshim point this out. The fact that Yaakov davened and didn't get an answer from Hashem that night, so Yaakov Avinu says, I can't rely anymore on a miracle. Now basically, it's a miracle. So he says, I can't rely on a miracle. I have to do physical vessels. What did he do? He sent gifts to appease Esav. Now, he knew Esav was greedy. Okay? Esav was greedy. So he gave in to, he appeased him with his...
Huh?
It's like a bribe.
Why is it a bribe? It's to save your life. You don't bribe.
The
was it a court case over here?
Well, even without a court case, normally...
Let me ask you a question. Do you ever send somebody presents?
Well, I'm not bribing
it. Well, now, why? What are you doing when you send somebody a present? That's bribery.
Not at all, because I do it too long.
Bribery is forbidden in a court case.
Preconceived ideas is not like doing something with a full...
Any reward for any good deed is a bribery. If you tell your kid, if you do well, or you learn Mishnayos by heart, or you get a good report card, or whatever it is, you'll reward them. Is that a bribe? So you're big kids.
So,
an adult your age is a big kid.
But it's not like I'm expecting something like
Hey, that's not true. The only chesed of MS is when you do it a dead body because they don't expect to return.
How did he send the
kids? Can I expect the same minute something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but he went.
Okay.
Weiter. It's okay. Gemalim meinikes, nursing camels, ubneihem with their ubneihem and their colts, their babies, shleishim, which were 30, parim sarboim, 40 cows, uparim asara, and 10 bulls. So here's a ratio of 1 to 4 instead of 1 to 10. Asenis esrim, 20 she donkeys, v'ayarim asar, and 10 he donkeys. So here the proportion is 1 to 2. So it depends on the animal how much proportion you have to send. V'yitim b'yad avodav, he put it into the hands of his servants. Well, yeah, Rashi goes into Tol Cheshbon. I don't want to go into that.
How come the camels are not mentioned?
What?
Men and, I mean, the female and male. It only just says camels and nursing.
The Medrash says, even though simply, no male camels were sent, but the Medrash brings down, don't read it, ubnehem, their children, read it, bonehem, their builders. So the builders were the male camels. So he says, why are they called builders rather than the male? So he brings down from the Medrash, Rashi in fact brings this down, because camels have relations in a very modest way more than all the animals do. So the Torah didn't want to call it male and female, the Torah rather called it their children, but it really means the male, but they're modest. The Gemara has an expression in Edevin, the Gemara says, and the Rebbe Rashab always added, God forbid. The Gemara says, if the Torah, God forbid, wouldn't have been given, we would learn different attributes from different animals. The Gemara said, we would learn modesty from a cat. A cat is a very, very modest animal, much more modest than a dog. And we would learn modesty. And the Torah is telling us that the camels were very modest animals. And therefore, rather than saying, their husbands, the male camels, the Torah uses a more refined word. Yeah,
Rabbi, you'll forgive me, but when your children, got you and dear Sarah gifts for your birthdays, you're telling me
that never happened.
A bribe?
Yeah.
No way.
Ask them.
That's love. And when you
what happens right after that? They say, can I have this?
I gave my parents gifts till they passed away.
Well, you had to because
years.
The way you behaved.
Well, that's a different story.
Right.
I'm not like you, Rabbi.
Okay.
I refuse to accept that as a bribe.
Okay, weiter. So he gave him all these animals. V'yitim b'yad avodav, he put it into the hands of the servants. Eider levade, each flock separately. And what did he do was, Rashi says, he put the camel separately, the goat separately, the cow separately, everybody was done separate. Why? Number one, that they shouldn't run wild. Everybody kept their own group. And he says, Vayemer al-Avodav, he said to the servants, Ivru lefanai, go before me. Verevach tasimu, in other words, go like a day before me, in front of me, Rashi says, and put a space between the groups. Why? Because when you have spaces, it looks much bigger. You know, if you have a group and then an empty space and another group, so when you look from the distance, it looks much, much more. So he wanted to, so to speak, not trick Esav, but he wanted Esav to imagine that it was once so much more, and therefore he should do it.
Have the same level of prophecy as Yaakov?
What?
The level of prophecy, what Esau's level?
No, nowhere near it. The Ramban says an interesting message over here. Quotes a Medrash. So the Medrash says, Yaakov Avinu taught, said to God, God, do me a favor. Whenever you want to punish my children, space it out. Space it out that they can handle it. Don't punish them at one time. Verevach tasimu, put the spirit, the space between Eder and Eder. In fact, it's like Ro'ad. Eder is like the same letters as the word Ro'ad, which is like loud noises, you know, problems, troubles. So you say, make a space, give it a space between them. Huh?
It's, what do you think that Hashem would have to use to know that? So that we offer that? Or is that that he needs a prayer?
Hashem wants us to daven. Hashem knows what we need better than we know what we need.
What if you know you've been bad and you go, okay, well, okay, so I'm going to ask for something that.
You got to mean it. If you mean it, it works. You don't mean it, no hope. Okay, Beitavis Arishon Neymar, he commanded the first group saying the following. And what does Lamer mean? So the question is, Lamer means to repeat it to somebody else. Who's he repeating it to over here? So there's a number of interpretations. One simple interpretation is that each group should say the same thing over to the other groups. You know, each group had their own servants. But some of Farshim learn that it refers to all the future generations. Whenever you're encountering Esav, this is the way you should deal with them. Now, you should come, if Esav is going to meet you, Usha'el Cholemer, and he will ask you, Lemi ata, to whom do you belong to? Whose are these? Ulevana Selech, and where you're going? Ulemi Ela Lefanecha, and whose are these that are before you? Like, who's the one sending all these things? He brings down over here from the Kozhnitz Magid that this was a sarcasm to Esav. That when Esav would say, why does Yaakov need all this wealth? Yaakov is a spiritual guy. Why does he need all this wealth? Like, who was it? It's like teasing Esav that this is probably what Esav is going to say. What does Yaakov need? He's only a spiritual person. Why does he need all the material thing? But we find before, you know, when you bless somebody with the bracha or you have a request, you always say the Rosh Hashanah of it is begur, begashmis or beruchnius. Tzaddikim always gave a bracha for gashmiut and ruchniut. Gashmis and ruchnius. So the question is, shouldn't the Jew say ruchnius first and then gashmius? After all, for a Jew, spiritual is more important than gashmius. So the answer, we learn it out from Yaakov Avinu. In the beginning of Ayetze, when Yaakov had his dream, what did he say? If God will be my God, what does he say? If God gives me this, and he returns me home, and he takes care of me physically, then God will be my God. So Yaakov Avinu first asked for gashmius, for God to give him tranquility and wealth and prosperity and peace. And then he asked for the spiritual. So the world says, but Yaakov Avinu's gashmius was much greater than our gashmius. But the answer is, but Yaakov Avinu's ruchnius is also much greater. So proportionally, it was the same thing. What, Yaakov?
Yeah, to his nephew.
No, he's saying afterwards. Oh. The dream was afterwards. So Yaakov Avinu is teaching a Jew. The Baal Shem Tov said a very interesting word. The Baal Shem Tov said, another Jew's gashmius, you have to treat like ruchnius. Another Jew's physical needs has to be treated spiritually. Because physical is the vehicle of bringing godliness into the world. You need a physical body, you need physical objects. That's the only way you could reveal godliness in the world. A soul in Gan Eden without a body can't do all that. So you have to ask first for the gashmius, and then for the ruchnius. You need gashmius. And therefore the custom is, when you ask tzaddikim for a bracha, the custom is first you ask for your physical needs, in the letter or whatever, and then you go to the spiritual needs. Why? Because we learn that from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov asked for gashmius, and then he asked for the spiritual. Okay. And obviously, if you want to take this pasuk a little bit more spiritually, when you meet Esav, my brother, okay, this refers to many things. It refers to simply enemies of the Jews, but it also refers to the Esav in every single Jew, who's our brother, so to speak, the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. They're brothers, right? They're in the same body. So when you meet Esav, your brother, and your brother is going to say, "Lemiata, what is, you know, what are you doing?" You should answer, "It's a gift, and you know, it's for Labdachol Yaakov. It's for the benefit of Yaakov that he's sending a present to appease the Yetzer Hara, that he should be quiet. Should be quiet, that he shouldn't get in the way of serving Hashem." So this is a question, not only the physical Esav asking, but it's the spiritual Esav asking. Where are you going? What are you doing already with all this? Where are you going to take it with? You know, what's the purpose of all these mitzvahs? But Martin, you should say, the Avdachol Yaakov, they belong to all this, to your servant Yaakov. Meaning, you said Lemiyata, the answer is La'Avdachol Yaakov. The next question, V'ana Selech, where are you going? Is to take the Mincha Hishlucha La'Adeni Le'Esav. It's a gift to Esav. B'nei Gamu Acharenu, and Yaakov Avinu is also after us. He's behind us. Now, what it means is, Yaakov Avinu, the Medrash says, if you meet someone on a journey, the Medrash learns off him an interesting lesson. If you meet somebody in the road, and he starts asking you too many questions, and you're suspicious of the person, you should always say, that there's a whole bunch of people coming also. There's a whole bunch of people coming. Why? That the guy should realize he can't do any harm to you because he might get caught by the people coming. That's what they said over here. He's also after. Yaakov is coming. You know, you can't, don't stand up with us because Yaakov is actually coming. So basically he answered all the questions that he asked. Okay. So it says, Yitzav Gamas Hasheni, he commanded the second group, Gamas Hashlishi, the third group, Gamas Kol HaHelchem Achir HaDorim Lema, all the servants following these flocks. He said, Kedavar Azek Tadabin on Esav, this is what, so you should speak to Esav, B'meitzach HaMeisei, when you find him. Meaning, whenever you see him, you should tell him to Esav. B'meitzach HaMeisei. And like we said before, the Mefarshim point out even more in this pasuk. Kadaver azeh tedabin on Esav. Any group that meets Esav throughout history, this is what you answer. We belong to Yaakov. It's a gift. We appease you. But Yaakov's after us. We stand for what Yaakov Avinu resembles and personifies. So we're talking sending presents to appease you, but we're not changing the religion because of it.
What gift do you give to your
Esav? You let him eat every so often. Give him to drink a little bit every so often. That's the gift to give. When he did, in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe brings down that Hillel, when he went to go eat, he said, I got to do a favor with my shamed one. You know, I have to do him a favor, give him something to eat. You appease him. Sure it is. We live from the Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis, sure. Yetzirah is a part of the Nefesh HaBamis. The Midas of the Nefesh HaBamis are called the Yetzirah.
If a person elevates what they eat, then it's not, it's good. So you can't,
yeah, but he'd rather not have to eat. He'd rather not have to eat.
How you eat and what you eat.
Over there, the Alter Rebbe Tanya wants to show what the Gemara is saying is that Hillel, because he was a tzaddik, his body lived from the nefesh olikis. You just have to throw, that's the expression, vafin abendel. You have to throw a bone to the nefesh abamis to keep it quiet.
Yeah, but you can't say it's the tzaddik, because if he gets elevated, it's going to fission, not
in Hillel's case, it was.
No, even in our case, if you eat for the right reasons,
Yeah.
When you eat for the right reasons, then. And you use the energy for good.
No, it tastes good.
Then it becomes holy. How can you say it goes to the Yetzer
Hara? The body lives from what? Nefesh HaBamis and Nefesh HaLikis. Nefesh HaBamis. In order for the soul to stay in the body, to keep it alive, what do you have to do?
You have to feed it.
You have to eat. No eating,
and then
you're going to live.
So it is going
to the Nefesh HaBamis.
Right, but not the Yetzer Hara aspect of it, unless you eat
the energy. The whole Nefesh HaBamis, no. So it's the Nefesh. Okay, instead of Yetzer Hara, use the word Nefesh HaBamis. It's the Nefesh HaBamis.
No, I want to understand it. You're not going to change your terms and satisfy me.
Can I explain it to
you? Is there a different aspect?
you need women to women here.
English is a second language.
You better buy your dad a present tonight.
Instead of the Yetzer Hara, use the word Nefesh HaBamis. What's the difference?
I'm asking, are they interchangeable?
The food that we eat is for the sake of the Nefesh HaBamis. Okay? So Hillel said he's going to be Gemel Chesed Imo'aluva Va'aniyah with the shamed one, which refers to the body in Nefesh HaBamis. That doesn't mean you can't elevate the food by eating it. But nevertheless, the fact that you're feeding the Nefesh HaBamis, because that's what keeps it in the body, you're doing a favor to the Nefesh HaBamis. We're not on that level. But a person should eat in order to be healthy. The difference is, it doesn't say you shouldn't enjoy the food you're eating. But the question is, there are people that eat and they enjoy the food that they're eating. Then there's people that are completely in food, immersed in food. You walk into elevators, what are they talking about? What they ate, what they will eat, where they're going, and what they ate, and they remember from 5 years ago. And there are people that are really into food. There are people reading food magazines, and then, you know, I mean, you know, everybody has to earn a living somehow.
They're really large, aren't they?
Yeah, very large.
Let's not go there.
And they're doing these things. There's a difference between, you know, the story of the ox and the shtreimel. You know what a shtreimel is?
Yeah.
Okay, the shtreimel. So the Baal Shem Tov once.
Wear
well, the Baal Shem Tov once showed his students in a vision of an ox wearing a shtreimel. So the students were shocked what it. So the Baal Shem Tov said, there was a Jew, a Hasidic Jew wearing a shtreimel, that was so indulged and involved in the meat that he was eating on Shabbos, that his whole essence was the meat. So he became an ox. The garment of Shabbos stay, so it was an ox wearing a shtreimel. Because he was so indulged, you know what I mean? He was so indulged in eating, the whole thing is eating, that's no good. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy the food. We're not on that level of dafk eating food that we hate. I mean, that's a certain level, but we're not there yet.
Is that why most kosher restaurants are so bad?
Yeah.